Kolpak and Izzo is brought to you by Laney's.
Your Saturday of fun starts right here, right now.
He actually brought the playbook for you, Kolpak. You could tweet this out and you could give it to everybody.
I just told him that's a foreign language to me, so you could give it to me and it wouldn't do me any good.
Who has more personality, Tom Izzo or Dom Izzo?
Dom Izzo by far. Oh, I'm telling you. I think they're separated at birth at some point. I'm pretty sure they were.
The Farnham of them is ready to kick you out without a credential. I'm not going to mess with anybody today. Biggie, you got yours, right?
Yeah, Kolpak always brings the wrong one. He wants everybody else to follow the rules, but can't understand when people call him on it that rules are there for a reason.
Kolpak and Izzo starts now on 970 WDAY.
The burning question today is, will Dom Izzo tweet his wedding?
Is he going to live tweet his wedding?
Will he live tweet his wedding? That'd He's already off to a roaring start.
That'd be awesome, by the way. I have a lot of questions about Izzo's wedding today.
Namely?
Well, as I tweeted out a few moments ago, my number one concern is, am I going to get fed at this wedding? And what am I going to get fed with? Is it going to be good? Okay, number one concern. Number two concern, which I will give credit to you for bringing up after I mentioned the food part, is there going to be an open bar at this wedding? Because if not, I'm not sure I'm going to go. Okay? I didn't notice 50-50. The invitation. I'm 50-50. So, Izzo, if you're listening, please tweet at me or send me a message that there will be free booze for at least a half hour. I mean, can we at least get warmed up before we got to start paying for our booze? Number three.
Oh, there's another one.
Oh, there's I got lots of questions. Lots of questions. Number three. Is Dom's I do going to be the loudest I do in the history of all weddings ever in the history of mankind? I do! Dominic, do you take Courtney to be your blissfully wedded wife? I do!
He is Mike Mefeely, I think, sitting in for Dom Izzo. I'm Jeff Kolpak. Welcome to Kolpak and Izzo.
I'm only here because Izzo's getting married today.
That's
the only reason I'm here. I have no other reason to be here.
We still want you.
I appreciate that.
Later in the show, Mike Cummings, he's our old compatriot, our old friend, who has more title rings, I think, than Bison football players. Everywhere Mike's gone, whether it's been KU, he's now with the Kansas City Royals in their public relations department. The guy wins. That's all he does is win.
Wait a second. He was the SID or assistant SID at Kansas, and they have a football team there still, right?
We could probably bring that up.
They gave Charlie Weiss a lot of money.
NDSU beat
Didn't Charlie
Kansas
Weiss coach
in
there?
Football.
Yeah.
Cummings
Remember
was at
him.
KU when NDSU beat him.
Okay, we'll bring that up. Do you see where Katy Perry went past 100 million? Speaking of Twitter, 100 million Twitter followers.
That's pretty impressive.
What did you got? Have you caught me yet?
I'm more interested in the fact that she's completely changed her look. She has now short cropped light hair and just a completely different style.
You know, with a teenage daughter, you would know that.
I would know that.
Her songs are really, like, explicit now, too. They're really, like, vulgar if you listen to the lyrics.
Oh, really?
It's something. I don't know.
Yeah, believe it or not, I just read an article in, like, Rolling Stone or something about her, whatever it was, Vogue or something. But she's, like, totally changed her whole, her whole makeup.
Because if I remember correctly, she's, like, her father is a pastor. If I'm not, or something, he's some sort of religious official.
She's got dad issues.
Now she's doing
Is this the result of her appearance on game day when she wanted to get a date with the Oklahoma quarterback? Is this a whole new look?
I don't know.
That was a little weird, wasn't it?
I just know that Katy Perry is.
Is Katy Perry.
She is.
Funad Barker, he's the head football coach at Shiloh Christian in Bismarck, who happens to be the head coach of what is regarded as the state's best football prospect for 2018, a defensive end named Ogbu Bartholomew. So the question is
he going to be a senior this fall?
He'll be a senior this fall.
Okay. Heck of an athlete. I'm from Bismarck.
What do you know about him?
I've seen him play basketball. Because Shiloh's obviously a Class B school. As a basketball player.
Are they really a Class B school?
Technically, well, I mean.
Whatever.
What do you mean by that? Just because they have best facilities in the country?
Exactly. They have the best facilities out of anybody in Bismarck. I mean, it's unbelievable. But
I just drove by there, and you have the baseball field that's turfed. You have the football facility.
Their gym's amazing. He's a superior athlete compared to other Class B athletes, and I think you'll see that in football and in basketball. He's incredible.
Are we going to get him?
So how big is this kid?
6'3", 6'4", something like that.
No, I think he's like 6'5".
Yeah. I mean, he's...
He's a DN, you said?
DN for now.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're the Bison beat writer.
Well, I don't know.
Is NDSU going to get him? Well, what are you taking the summer off to follow Legion baseball around? Or
something
what?
Like that.
He likes basketball, too. So it's interesting if he'll take football or basketball.
Always looking forward to Matt Cullen. Matt Cullen will join the show at 10:05. I'm sure he'll tell us about his future plans. You being a Morehead guy, you could get this out of him.
I'm sure Matt's going to come on this show and go, oh, yeah, I'm going to play again next year, guys. Yeah, I saved it for now.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would if I were him.
Well, I would too.
Was there a bigger audience than Kopac and Izzo out there?
No, not at all. Maybe 8:30 to 11.
How are your ratings doing?
Maybe 8:30 to 11 on DOI, but other than that, no, I can't think of a bigger place to make an announcement like that.
Anyway, so Matt will join us at 10:05. What a season for him. Another Stanley Cup. Of course, the question is an unfair question. What are you going to do with a cup? I mean, it's
coming to Morehead. He wouldn't diss us, would he?
No, absolutely. I don't think so.
The thing he did last year was fantastic. He brought it to the youth sports arena, had all the kids, gave kids priority. It was great.
It'd be great if you could bring it to Izzo's wedding. We could drink out of it with that open bar.
Cully, if you're listening, which I'm sure you're not, if you want to bring the Stanley Cup to Dom Izzo's wedding today, where's it at? The Avalon?
Avalon. Yeah.
Is it downtown or the one out west?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's out west. It's downtown.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I never thought of that. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah,
I'll be sitting there downtown by myself going, hey, where's everybody?
You're Jeff Kolpak. You're never alone downtown.
Chris Murphy of the Forum will join us after that. And Chris is a great segue because he's covered Matt Cullen and talked to him the last couple of years. And also, in advance of John Clark is the Manoman head football coach. The Hatfields and McCoys are getting together out there.
How about that?
Manoman and Wobbin.
Manoman and Wobbin getting together. And look, we all realize that things change and some rural school districts are losing students. And, you know, we know the whole story. It's been happening for a couple of decades now. But it is, they'll go forward together. It's whatever's best for the kids. But it is kind of sad that some of these rivals have to join each other. Because Manoman and Wobbin are, for small school Minnesota, that's about as heated as a rivalry as you can get. Family members are involved. It's just, it's good stuff. And now they're going to play together.
Well, and there's family. You talk about family, the Clarks.
Yeah,
you know, so there's, you know, they're playing golf right now together as we speak. I'm sure if it's anything like my brother's, it's probably he's going to come on with a hard edge.
Well, it's anything like your brother's are already drunk, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, man. How's your golf game?
It's terrible. Yeah? Thanks for asking. Yep, I'm 50. I have a family. I play a couple times a week. You know, I was listening to, was it Persons you were talking to? And he said, you know, that now that he's not touring anymore, he gets out and plays a little bit. And he said he can play okay for 12 or 13 holes and everything kind of falls apart. And I'm not comparing my golf game in any way, shape, or form to Josh Persons. But at one time, I could, you know, qualify for the Pine to Palm Championship flight and play some of the local tournaments okay. And at my low old man level, I see that same thing. I can play okay for like 9 holes with my buddies and, you know, playing for a couple of bucks here and there. And then get to the back 9, and it just all just falls apart. Just, it's awful.
You just don't have staying power.
Well, it might be the beverages we're drinking on the front 9, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, you got to contribute to the economy, of course.
Yes, you do.
Well, let's discuss. I want to keep going. We had Joe Vettel on at the end of my golf show and talking about the state of golf courses. No better to talk about that than with you. You play a lot in Morehead. What do you say? Morehead's, we got it good here, don't we? I mean, about the number of public courses.
And this is, if you talk to some of the people involved with golf in Fargo Morehead, what they'll tell you, and I got to be careful here, but I'll say it, is that we're overbuilt for golf in a market this size, and that we have unbelievable facilities, especially public facilities, that are very low priced, very accessible, very affordable, and in great shape for the most part. But if you like golf, if you love golf, we're in a nirvana situation, other than the fact that the season's like 4 months long.
Well, other than that, but people don't realize that you call up and get a tee time, you can almost immediately go out there. Mm-hmm. I have friends on the East Coast where you got to make a tee time like a week in advance.
Yes.
Well, pay like 5 times.
Well, the Twin Cities are the same way, or at least they used to be. I have friends in the Twin Cities who used to drive down to Owatonna. They would join Owatonna Country Club or and drive the the 50 miles down to Owatonna because they couldn't, they didn't want to put up with the busyness of the course in the Twin Cities. One thing I've noticed though, and I don't know if the numbers bear this out, and so this is just my observation. You'd have to talk to McCullough or Russ Nelson or Corey Hurlickson. But it seems to me that the last couple of years, I have seen fewer people playing golf, whether it's at Edgewood, whether it's at Village Green, whether it's at the Meadows. I just don't see as many people. I can go out on a Saturday afternoon, and there just doesn't seem to be as many people out playing anymore. Maybe it's been the weather this year. Maybe it's been kind of goofy. But I just don't think as many people are playing as much anymore.
But yeah, but then Osgood yet has record numbers. Maybe it's the time thing.
Well,
you know, nine holes,
I think,
go to Osgood.
I think golf has changed so much in terms of people don't want to dedicate 5 or 6 hours of a day because they can't. I mean, because they got three kids who are in baseball, hockey, and soccer, and a wife who's saying, yeah, you know, it's not 1972 anymore. You're going to be home tonight. you know. And so I think the whole dynamics of golf have changed, and the future is going to be Osgood or El Zagel in just a quick 6 holes and get out of there.
He's Mike McFeely of the Mike McFeely Show, heard here 8:30 to 11 every Monday through Friday on WDUY AM, sitting in for the almost married Dom Izzo.
I do!
You want to say that again?
I do!
We'll be back with 3 downs.
I put this ring on the
right
finger!
After this. You know what that music is?
Football.
I'm going to try to test your feeble mind on football.
Wow.
McFeeble. You know what's killing me? To my right is this monitor that has Craig Bowe at the park that. And,
yeah.
And it's not usable right now?
I don't know what button it is.
Yeah.
I want it.
Have we gotten news on what button it is?
No, I've texted Capel. He's apparently not answering my texts and clearly not listening to the program.
That's when he told Dom to park that. Can we just park that?
No, it's Schneff it was. It was Schneff.
Was it Schneff?
Oh, yeah, it was Schneff. Yep, Kevin Schneff, sports editor of the Forum.
That music, it's always football season, of course, here on Kopac and Izzo / McFeely, in which I'll give 3 questions and test my friend on his state of football.
So that's the way we're doing this, is you're going to
you're gonna
throw them at me?
I'm throwing
them. And I'm supposed to give a witty retort?
Unless you want to throw a 3 at me.
Normally, it's the other way around. Normally, Dom asks him the questions.
Do you want to throw a 3 at me? That's fine. Or we could alternate.
No, you came up with the question, so you throw them at me.
I'll throw it to you.
Okay.
Which of these 2 games is more appealing to you? The Bison at Eastern Washington or the dreaded Dakota marker, the Bison at the Jackrabbits?
Ooh.
What is more appealing?
That's a very good question. I think that it's going to be the Bisons at the Jackrabbits just because of what we talked about last fall is when South Dakota State and NDSU both went Division I, they were arm in arm. They were, you know, them against the world. USD and UND blew off the Division I thing, and SDSU and NDSU were swap and spit to go Division I, and they were just the best friends of all time, and Joe Chapman and...
Peggy Miller were holding hands.
They were holding hands.
Singing Kumbaya.
Absolutely, yep. Around the campfire. And then for the longest time, it was, you know, John Stiglmeyer and Craig Bowl just respected each other so much. And these programs, we just respected. It's a respectful rivalry. It's not a blood
We're going
rivalry.
Arm in arm on this, yep. Division I
and the last
venture.
The last couple of years, it's fairly clear that South Dakota State has gotten sick of getting pounded every year by NDSU. And the last couple of years, there is open dislike, I would say,
on Twitter.
Yes, but also there's just some edginess there when you talk to either side, not necessarily in front of the cameras, but certainly, you know, behind the scenes, there's some okay, we really don't like each
and
other.
And the South Dakota State linebacker almost trying to break the ankle of Bruce Anderson.
That adds to it. And the recruiting wars between the two schools and the Twitter shot about
the camp.
The 3 camps versus the 1 camp. And it's taken another step.
That's good. It's good for us, right?
Yeah. Love it.
Gotta love it. Yeah.
Gotta love conflict. Just
mix it up, man.
What it's all about.
Sporting News labels Alabama and Mississippi State on November 11th as the biggest trap game of the season. Looking, again, one more Bison question. Looking at the NDSU schedule, you might want to call it up. You probably don't have it memorized like me.
I know the non-conference slate. I'm not sure about the...
Well, you see where I'm going
with this. Just keep on killing time. just keep on talking for a while.
What do you see
as the biggest trap game for our bison.
Oh, boy, the biggest trap game for our bisons. Well, there's a couple of them as I look at the schedule. I would say Western Illinois might be a possible trap game. Are they going to be any good this year?
Yeah, they'll be all right.
They'll be okay.
They've been improved, right? Their coach, yeah. Charlie Fisher.
Yeah, he's not bad. He's a good guy. That's after a road game at Youngstown State and before a home game at Northern Iowa. And so that Western Illinois would be one. And then, frankly, I know that South Dakota is improved. I still don't think they're there yet. But I think South Dakota later in the season might be that trap game, too, because that's comes after the Dakota Marker game and then before the Illinois State game. And so, NDSU is coming off playing Youngstown, Western Illinois, Northern Iowa, and South Dakota State back-to-back. Then they have South Dakota at home. And, of course, we know what happened a couple of years ago against South Dakota.
That'll be the only hitch is remember the Alamo kind of thing.
Yeah.
I
don't know that South Dakota's ready yet. They're improved under what's his face? Who's the coach?
Bob Nielsen.
Bob Nielsen. They're improved, and I know they like the recruiting class from this last year, but I don't know if they're ready on the lines of scrimmage yet to challenge NDSU.
There's something in South Dakota about the dress code of their coaches. Bob Nielsen, you know, of course, wears the tie.
Yeah. Yep.
And Craig Smith has the ugliest plaid shirt with a red tie every time out. I've outwardly tweeted, I go, Craig, it's not a good look.
They can both coach, though. I think Nielsen really knows what he's doing. And Smith does, too. But Nielsen.
That's a great hire.
Nielsen really knows what he's doing.
It's a great hire. And it says something about concerns of Western Illinois are the budget.
Have you checked into some of that stuff? I've looked into some of that. That is a mess.
It's not good.
Oh, my goodness. They're talking about possibly, like, way off, like, closing Western Illinois. Like, in the university, just shut her down because they can't afford it. It's like, wait, what? It's not good.
Well, the town, what do you think it'll do to the town? I mean.
The Red Ox cannot go away.
A red flag was last year when NDSU and Western went into that game at Macomb, both nationally ranked for what it's worth for FCS. And there's like 800 people there.
Yeah, nobody cares in Macomb. Nope, absolutely not.
How do you get money? I mean, the students must be funding it at an outrageous amount.
Well, the state was funding it at an outrageous amount. But NDSU students don't fund as much as anybody else.
Not nearly.
Certainly Western Illinois is high, too.
Quickly, before we have to head to the bottom of our news, I can't leave without this. Was Coastal Carolina justified in moving to FBS?
No, none of these schools are. Because I don't think Georgia Southern is. I don't think Coastal Carolina is. I don't think Liberty is. I don't think any of these schools are. They're chasing this FBS dream that doesn't exist. I don't know what.
Other than the Power Five, that's a dumb move.
In my opinion, it is, yes. In my opinion, they'd be better off staying in FCS. I don't know if they're going to make that much more money. No athletic program makes that much money anyway, unless you're Ohio State or Texas or.
Unless you get the Buco Bucks on TV.
They're chasing something to me that doesn't exist unless they know that it's some strategic move because they have a crystal ball. They see what's going to happen in 5 years, but nobody knows that.
Well, eventually, I think they'll all be together. You're talking about these.
Yeah.
The former FCS.
Yeah. It's going to be like FCS is now where all the Division II schools ended
FBS
up moving
junior.
Up. Yeah, yep. Exactly. So no, to answer your question, no, not a good move
getting
by Coastal
stadium,
Carolina.
Right? The Chanticleers are getting a new stadium, aren't they?
Are they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't believe you're not plugged in.
Well, see, and that's why I'm upset.
At least a big improvement.
Why I'm upset about this is because there's no chance.
Isn't Coach
Job
and have you been talking?
Well, he's been busy lately. He's been advising Trump on the economy, so.
There you have it. Not bad.
Yeah, it's
not bad.
I do this every day. Yeah. I blow
you
stuff
got some
out
experience.
Of my butt every day. Yeah. It doesn't make a difference.
Stay tuned for the bottom of the hour news. This is WDAY AM 970 and WDAY.com. Stay with us after this. Kopech and McFeely return on the airwaves. It's good to know, Michael, that somebody that we tutored has actually made it in life. It's unbelievable. You think about it.
Yeah, it is. He's overcoming great odds.
Yeah.
Hanging around the Forum sports department back in those days. If you can make something of yourself after that experience, you have a special steel will that is rare in humans these days.
Mike Cummings is the assistant director for media relations for the Kansas City Royals. Has more title rings than I think Bison football players. We got to figure out, first of all, how many.
But please be joined by Mike via the phone line somewhere in Kansas City. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
How many rings do you have?
I've got two, actually. So I've got a few to go before I catch any of the Bison players. But we got one for 2014 in the AL, winning the AL championship, and then in 2015, of course, winning the World Series.
Cummings is a UND guy, Jeff, so he's don't bring up the Bison stuff. Yeah, I think he was a little miffed about some of the Bison stuff going on.
I make no secret of where I went to school, but obviously my father works closely with NDSU, so got a little skin in the game there, I guess. So.
There you go.
The reason I wanted to have you on, the main reason, is you have to deal with a man named Matt Strom, who is the left-handed pitcher extraordinaire, at least lately. He's the kid from West Fargo who, it was a great story. He left West Fargo 153 pounds and a fastball maybe that touched 80. Now he's 185 or something and throws in the mid-90s, which is a remarkable story. How do you see, when you talk about Matt Strom, what kind of a kid are we dealing with here, actually a young man?
Well, yeah, and forgive me if I call him a kid because I've got about 10, 11 years on him. But, Matt's a really good kid. You know, I think, I don't know, like descriptive words for him. I'm kind of at a loss, but, really quiet, really goes about his business in a professional manner. And, you know, somebody that obviously has worked very hard to get to where he's at. And Thursday, I think, was another step in that where, he got to make his first major league start against the Angels. And I think it went about as well as you know, one could have asked. Went five innings and allowed one unearned run and got the win. So, hopefully things continue to go upward from that.
It was the Royals' plan all along to start him, was it not? From what I've been able to read, that the plan was to kind of break him in, you know, get him in some sort of relief role, and he excelled in that. He had a couple bumps in the road, but certainly excelled at that. But the plan all along was to get him out there and allow him to be a starter and see where he could go with that, right?
Well, I think eventually, long term, it's kind of tough to say at this point in time, just because he made the start Thursday, more or less, because we have two starting pitchers on the disabled list right now, but. Matt last year made the jump from AA to the majors because of injury too, and really took off with it and had a great last 2 months of the year. And then coming into the year this year, we were sitting in spring training with I think six or seven guys that had started in the major leagues, and so he kind of ran into a numbers game there. I think long term the plan is probably for Matt to be a starter eventually. And I think that he's kind of shown that he can be a guy that can come in and get one or two outs, or a guy that you can say, okay, take these three innings and run with it. And he's excelled in both situations. So
one of the story angles early in the year, and it happened before our very eyes, right down I-94 at the Twins at Target Field, was his early struggles, which was documented, I think, to be a hitch. How did he handle it? What did you see him behind the scenes when that thing was going down?
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't on that trip, so I didn't get to see, firsthand. But just from watching him, seeing him, I guess, on TV, it just looked like confidence-wise, it's funny, but he had kind of a rough outing, one of his last outings of spring training, where he got hit around a lot, and it just kind of seemed like that mushroomed into, the next outing and then into the regular season in the first couple. And we sent him down for I think about a week and a half, and he went down to AAA and I guess figured some things out and came back up, and he's really been outstanding ever since. And when you're a pitcher at the professional level, especially because you're facing the best in the world, you're going to have situations where you struggle. And I think Matt probably learned a pretty good lesson that, you just have to always be confident in yourself and, think that even if you get hit hard one outing, don't let it carry over into the next one.
I was at the Twins game. I was at opening day when he pitched, and he did not pitch particularly well, though. I think the numbers were blown up a little bit because there was a couple things that went on in that inning. It wasn't like the ball was ringing around the ballpark, but he did walk a couple of guys, and there was a couple of bleeder hits. And it all adds up to six runs that I think he ended up allowing. But he, after the game, when I got a chance to talk to him with a handful of other reporters from Kansas City, was very short, was very, you know, 1, 2, 3-word answers. But his theme was, it's one game, you know, I have to bounce back. There's 162 games, all the cliches you want to throw out there. But that is true if you stop and think about it. I mean, if you're facing Miguel Sano, Joe Mauer, and, you know, whoever, and they get a couple hits off you, you can't look at it as the end of the world. You're not going to survive in the major leagues. And it took him a while, apparently, as you said, but he was able to get back in the groove, and he's throwing well again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you know, really, Mike, he hadn't struggled at the major league level yet, because last year he came in and really, I don't think he had a bad outing. So, you know, to have to go through that the early part of this year, I think it was just something new for him that, you know, it maybe took a couple outings and a trip down to AAA to get it figured out.
Have you two made that North Dakota connection, that NoDak connection, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of funny, but, you know, you were mentioning the Bison earlier, but the first time I met Matt, really surreal, but it was spring training last year, and they were talking NFL draft, and so I see Matt kind of standing there watching one of the TVs. It's on NFL Network, and they're talking about the draft, and, of course, Carson Wentz, and so I walked up to him, and I don't remember if I said it or he said it, but I said something like, man, Fargo's really come a long way if, you know, they're going to get somebody drafted number one overall like this. And, you know, he kind of laughed. And, you know, we've talked about different things. You know, we've had some of the same coaches, actually, ironically. You know, I played baseball in the late 90s, and Matt was, like I said, about 10, 12 years after me. But, yeah, we've kind of bonded over some of that, so...
What's the difference between you were at KU, which is some pretty high level stuff, obviously, in the world of major college sports, and now you're at the major level when you're talking about pro sports. Is it the same? Is it different? What's it like?
I'd say it's quite a bit different. You know, I think mainly just the schedule of you know, the major league games, and you know, not only 162 games, but you know, then you get into the off season and you have the winter meetings and you have the free agent period and you have all that stuff. And you turn around and spring training starts in mid February. And so, you know, then you're on the run again, where I think at KU, you know, in all college sports, it's pretty quiet relatively during the summer months. And then, you know, it's kind of go for during the school year and everything. But I'd say that's probably the main difference. Yeah.
How are the Royals fans handling the Royals not getting off to the start that everybody wanted them to get off to?
Well, I think that, you know, early on it was tough just because, you know, we have several impending free agents and Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas, among a couple others. But, you know, this was kind of the year that, you know, we were going to kind of go for it, I think. And lately, actually, things have been going better. Mike, you can probably relate to this, but compare it to like a golf round where, you know, maybe we were shot an 8 or a 9 on the first hole, and we've been trying to work our way back since then. I think that the way we played lately, I think fans are excited. So
yeah, I think
hopefully we can keep it going.
8-2 in the last 10 games, and American League Central, of course, people know the AL Central around here. The Twins are in first place. But they're only 34-30. The Royals are 32-34, only 3 games out. And so it's not, and there's a lot of baseball left. So,
Definitely, yeah.
I see your old roommate, Brad Schlossman. Go ahead, before.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and I think that's something, too, that, you know, talking about a major league season, that when you struggle early, I think it's easy to panic or, you know, get excited or whatever. But, like you said, it is a long season, and you got to kind of let it play out before, you know, you make big decisions like that. So
I see your old roommate Brad Schlossman is joining you in the winner's circle, sports writer of the year, headed North Carolina.
Yes. You know, he he obviously has had a lot of success in his career and everything. And you know, it was funny, but you know, being a roommate with him in college and everything, and just you know, the stuff that we would discuss and just the issues and everything, it was almost like taking another journalism class, you know. So between the two of us, you know, we've had a lot of great experiences and everything. And obviously, you know, a couple of years ago was really special where, you know, I got to go to World Series and experience winning it. And then he got to cover, UND winning the Hockey National Championship that spring. So, really cool situation there. Yeah.
So my wife and I are coming down to Kansas City, in about 10 days, maybe a couple of weeks. Mike,
okay.
My wife has one question that she wanted me to ask you when I told her that you were going to be on the show today. Do they sell beer at the baseball park in Kansas City? Do they sell beer?
They do indeed. Yes.
Good.
Yes.
That's all she cares about.
So the trip's on.
The trip is on. We're not gonna call it off. Fantastic. I can tell her that then. That's great.
Thank you, Michael. Yes. Always great to catch up.
For sure. Thank you, guys.
Take care. That's Mike Cummings. He's assistant director of media relations for the Kansas City Royals. Cummings Nation. All we do is live in it. Those Where's Waldo shots that Sossman said in the World Series.
Yeah,
it was awesome. Just, you know, there's Cummings leading the guy out in the field for an interview. Anyway, this is Kopac and Izzo and McFeely. We'll be back talking Bison football recruiting and Shiloh Christian right after this. Kopac and McFeely returns on WDYAM and 970. You love that sound, don't you? You want to be part of my show.
I do.
Izzo.
I do. Izzo. Yeah. You're gonna kick Izzo out the door for me? That'd be a mistake on your part.
Yeah, he works a little harder.
People like what?
He works a little harder than you.
Wow. People also like him. People don't like me, so you're better off having Izzo as your partner.
I don't know. You're not that evil, are you?
People just don't like me.
Yeah. Maybe it's something to do with your political persuasions.
I wear them on my sleeve.
The Bison have received three verbal commitments to this date. Got a couple last week in receiver Phoenix Sproles from Robbinsdale Cooper and running back DJ Stewart from Kimberly, Wisconsin. That goes along with quarterback Trey Lance from Marshall, who committed a couple of weeks ago, which, of course, as we know in this day and age, it's one thing to get a commitment. It's another thing to keep them.
Oh, they're going to keep being recruited by whoever was recruiting them before. And then, and I believe this when Chris Kleiman and others say that if NDSU offers somebody, then all of a sudden other schools are jumping in on the pile, too, to try to get a piece of them. So,
generally regarded as the top prospect in the state of North Dakota is a young man named Ogbuth or Bartholomew. He's a defensive end at Shiloh Christian High School in Bismarck, North Dakota. Pleased to be joined by the head coach at Shiloh, Funan Barker. Good morning, Coach.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Give us the lowdown on your DN, Ogbuth Bartholomew.
Well, Bartholomew, you know, he's a raw talent. He's been playing football a couple of years. You know, a real great story. He's originally from Nigeria, came over via, you know, foreign exchange student. Hadn't played any football until his sophomore year. He, you know, soccer guy and a lot of basketball. And I actually convinced him to play football when he was in shooting hoops in the gym. So came out his first year. Played his first football game before he had ever watched a game on TV. And I tell you what, though, one thing he does do is he's an extremely hard worker, and I think that's really shown over the 2 years he's played football, and he's reaping some accolades because of that.
How do you teach a kid from scratch to play the game?
Well, you know, you just really start with the basics, you know, fundamentals, and, you know, you just work them in, keep it simple for him, one position on either side of the ball, and then just expand from there. And I tell you what, he's done a tremendous job working hard for us. When we first started, we were offensively, he could only play tight end for us. That was it. But now he can move around, play any of our wide receiver positions, and defensively he plays DN for us, and you know, really gets after the quarterback and is a good run stopper for us. So we're glad we have him. I know that.
Well, I know I need to correct myself. It's Bartholomew Ogbu. I got that transposed, so my bad on that. But who's recruiting him? Who are you hearing from?
You know, he's got a few offers on the table. You know, you're just speaking about NDSU, UND, South Dakota, Wyoming, Northern Iowa, Liberty University, down in Virginia. So he's getting a lot of looks. He certainly hasn't decided yet. He's kind of going through doing his homework on each school, and then also just getting ready for his senior year as well. But he'll be down at the Bison camp here next week, and you know, he's got a couple others lined up. So it's an exciting time for him and our program, and we're looking forward to what he can do for us this senior year.
He also plays basketball. Is it for sure that he's going to go to college to play football, or is he that good at basketball that he might get some offers and some looks there as well?
You know, he does have one basketball offer, but I think he's all in on football.
Okay.
You know, that's just my gut feeling. I think if some schools came and offered him basketball, maybe that would sway him. That's something only he can answer. But from my conversations with him, I think he's ready to be a college football player.
How tall and how much does he weigh?
He's about 6'6", probably about 210, 215 right
Ooh.
Now.
Ooh.
By the start of the senior year, I think he'll probably be around that 220 mark. And he's real lengthy and explosive. And I think one of the things the college coaches are seeing is, you know, one, it's hard to teach. You know, you can't teach size and speed.
Oof.
You're that big. But one of the things is, I think his ceiling is so high because he is so raw technique-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once college coaches take him, first off, they're going to be able to put 40, 50 pounds on pretty quickly with his frame and keep him as explosive as he is. And I think he'd be a dangerous asset for whatever team's lucky enough to get him.
So if he goes FCS, what weight might he play at there as a D-end at FCS? Could they get him to 6'6", 230, 240, or is that too heavy for what they need him to do?
I think they could probably get him bigger than that based on his size and weight right now. I mean, they say he's about 210, 215 now. I honestly think a team could pack 30 pounds on him pretty quick, especially when you consider you're going to have a redshirt year, your freshman year. You're not really expected to really contribute probably until that third year. It could be sooner than that, of course, but I think he can get to 230 to 250 pretty easily.
Fernand Barker, the head coach at Shiloh Christian, joins us on the Saturday Morning Sports Show. Do you think he'll make a decision this summer?
I think he'll probably narrow down, be ready to at least make a verbal commitment this summer for sure.
And any gut feeling? I mean, do you expect more schools to come crashing here?
I think just like you were speaking to, I think once one school offers you it automatically there's a little bit of a trickle-down effect where other schools, it puts you on the radar a little more. I know he's visited with quite a few schools, so we'll just see what the summer holds in the season and go from there.
How do you use a guy like this for you personally? Where do you put him on the field?
Wherever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, for us, obviously, you know, that's a heck of a matchup for us. Not a lot of other teams have guys as big as he does offensively, and so we're able to spread him around the field and force defenses to adjust to him. And then defensively for us, you know, we bring him off the edge hard and force teams to really commit extra people to him, whether that be a running back or double teaming or whatever it might be. But it's hard to stop him one-on-one.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate the time, and best of luck on this recruiting venture, I guess, you guys are going on.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
That's Fernand Barker. He's the head football coach at Shiloh Christian in Bismarck, North Dakota. The top prospect in North Dakota.
6'6", 210, 215 right now.
With room
as
to grow.
Senior-to-be, with room to grow to be 230, 240, maybe 250 at 6'6", with raw talent. That's a pretty...
That's what we do in FCS.
Pretty attractive.
We grow them.
Yep, you take a kid like that and make him better, make him bigger.
That does it for the first half of Colpack and McFeely / Izzo. Stay tuned after the top of the hour news on WDAY Day AM 970 and WDAY.com. Matt Cullen, fresh off the Stanley Cup. So don't go away. Second hour, Colpack and Izzo. Need to, again, once again, congratulate my co-host who is tying the knot today, and it's going to be live on Twitter, we think.
Do you remember your wedding day?
Absolutely. It was like 50 below.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in December, and it was like 40 degrees on a Tuesday, and then by the time the wedding day came around, it was cold.
Cold.
Very cold.
I don't remember much about my wedding day. Except that I was extremely nervous, and my wife continues 20 years later to give me crap she said you were so uptight and so nervous that it was just ridiculous.
You know, that's a good segue, because I think one of the highest profile couples in the area happened to be Matt and Bridget Cullen, who... I think I've been married now for a few years and together for a lot. Before we get to the Stanley Cup talk, and please be joined by Matt. Matt, how many years have you and Bridget been together?
13. 13 years. Yeah. Well, I mean, we met in high school, so
yep.
Quite a bit longer than that. But, she was a Spuds basketball player years and years ago. So Yeah, we've been together for quite a while.
That was the day. I remember your wedding day.
I do. Well, I just had the anniversary, so thank God. I was getting nervous when I heard you guys talking about anniversaries. I was like, oh, geez, I got to double check here. But, yeah, June 10th, 2004. So, yeah, that was I remember it.
Have you ever forgotten your anniversary like I did 1 year and I'm still paying for it?
Well, you know, thank God for the iPhone, right? Like, you got everything right in there.
No, I messed up.
Well, I covered Bridget Setter back in the day. I mean, I covered Minnesota High School Athletics. Great guard, great athlete. But she never won a Stanley Cup, and you did. What's the feeling now a week later?
You know, it's awesome. It's actually been nice to get a little bit of separation from it all. You know, it happened so fast, and then, you know, then sort of the party's on, and you're just in the middle of everything, and there's so much going on. It's kind of nice to actually have a little bit of time here to take a breath, and you just kind of can really appreciate it. It's just been an unbelievable run here, and having a little time to reflect on it has been just awesome. It's just it's one of those sort of deals that I think you probably will appreciate more and more as you get older, but it's just pretty great. You know, we had a special group, and, you know, to get it done again this year was, man, you know, just awesome.
This was your third one. I don't want to say is one better than the other, because that's you're not going to be able to say, it's like saying one kid is better than the other kid, but is this one unique from the other ones? I remember that last year the talk was just what a great team it was, and you came together, and just all the stuff that happened. How does this one compare to last year and then the first one down in Carolina?
Yeah, you know, I think I was thinking about this, and I think that, you know, this one was probably more rewarding than any of them, just because of the fact that you go into the season with expectations that are so high, knowing you're facing a big challenge. I mean, teams just don't repeat anymore, and you go through the season with a target on your back, basically, and you know you're going to face challenges and adversity. I mean, coming off of playing 100-plus games last year, you know you're going to deal with injuries, and so, yeah, you go into it knowing there's expectations. You have a really good team, but knowing it's a huge challenge. And, you know, we were in the unique position that we had almost our entire team back, so it was a special sort of opportunity to try to do it again with basically the same team. I mean, now with the salary cap in the game, it's hard to keep your team together after a long playoff run, and we were lucky enough to have that. So I think we all as a group kind of felt it was a special opportunity, and yeah, you know, it just, so to answer your question, I would say it's probably the most rewarding feeling of the three. I mean, each one has been so special, but this one was just such a good feeling of accomplishing something that you put out at the beginning of the year as a goal, and we got it done.
Do you have any ideas what you're going to do with the cup this time around when it's your turn to have it?
Yeah, I don't. We're kind of actually just doing that right now. You know, as things calm down in Pittsburgh here, everybody starts making their plans and all that. So we're just working that out now. Likely we'll try to bring it home. But again, we got to figure something out. We'll probably go down that road here in the next couple of days and try to get it dialed in. Obviously, you know, when they do the schedule, it goes first to guys that have specific dates that they really want it. So for example, if a guy's getting married or something and he wants it at his wedding, you know, they make it a priority to get that done. So, I'm not getting married again this year, so I don't have, you know, a major priority. So we'll see, as the summer goes on, they have to figure out the schedule, and obviously there's a lot of different things they have to take into account. So we'll figure that out here probably in the next couple weeks.
Are you going to ask the question, Jeff, or am I? It's your show.
It's the elephant in the room.
You ask the question. You ask the question.
All right. When, what's the thoughts on the R question, you know, the R word, the retirement? Sooner or later, or what are you thinking?
Yeah. Well, it won't be long. I'll give it a couple weeks, probably. I mean, we'll get out to the lake and just try to get a little bit of clarity on everything and a little separation from everything and a little just kind of quiet time. And obviously, with the three boys at home, it's not easy to carve that time out. So, getting home here soon will be nice to get a little time to just, you know, reflect on everything, get a little clarity. But yeah, I mean, if I was being honest, I'd say I'm definitely leaning that direction. You know, I've been blessed with these opportunities the last 2 years, and, you know, it's a pretty cool cap to a pretty good career. But I just want to give it its due time. It's an important, it's a decision you can only make one time, and I just want to make sure I get it right. You know, thought long and hard about it last summer, and Bridget and I put a lot of time into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we were able to come up with the right decision, but, you know, every year's different, so we'll give it some time. And, you know, it's not just about me. It's about family. It's about – there's a lot that goes into it, and so we'll give it a little bit of time. But it won't be too long. I definitely won't be dragging this one out.
How cool was it to have the three boys along for the ride? We saw a video of the boys in the locker room after victories. I mean, that had to have been pretty neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They, you know, the team's been awesome. They welcome them into the group like their family. And, you know, they're around the rink all the time. We had that homeschool arrangement that we did last year where they're at the practice rink, you know, getting that we have a teacher that we hired. So they've been doing their homeschool at the practice rink. So, I mean, they're, you know, I think they look at my teammates as if they're like extended uncles, kind of. They're part of the family, and they're in the locker room all the time. And, so, yeah, you know, the celebrations and having them involved with everything. They're right in the locker room spraying everybody with beer. And I mean, I never forget catching that glimpse of one of my kids walking in the locker room with a half-empty beer, and I was like, hold on a second. This is, you know. But, I mean, they're right in there, and the guys treat them like their own family, and, you know, they're on the ice, and they're on the pitching mound. We're out throwing for the first pitch for the Pirates game. And I mean, it's just kind of cool. The team brings them in and lets them be a part of all of it. You know, I love that. I mean, that was a big part of the reason why I came back, was to continue to give them this opportunity to be around everything and, you know, be around a guy like Sidney Crosby and see Malkin what he does. And, you know, the list goes on. So, you know, it's just been a cool experience. It's fun. And, I don't know that they even fully appreciate it yet. It's probably something down the road that they'll look back on and be like, holy cow, that was unbelievable. But right now it's, you know, it's the norm for them, which is kind of funny. But they get a kick out of it.
You said last year that the kids, you know, kind of pushed you or helped you make the decision to come back again. Are they talking to you again, Matt, or are they, you know, they've done their thing now? Are they trying to put pressure on you to play again, or are they maybe it's reversed and they said, okay, we've done it, and Dad, will you retire now so you can be home and coach us?
Yeah, no, they definitely voiced their opinion, and they definitely, you know, they're all on board for doing it again. And
okay.
Obviously, they love the game and they love being around it. You know, it's a really nice setup that we have there. And obviously, when you're winning and you know, you win the cup 2 years in a row, it's pretty easy. And obviously, they love that. So it's been pretty cool. But yeah, they definitely are on board for doing it again. But it's like I told them before, I've heard enough out of them. I'm not listening to them anymore. I've been making the decision this year, so we'll see what happens.
Put down that beer and stop telling me to keep playing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Before I let you go, how's the foundation doing? You're talking about Bridget and all the work she put into it. What's the latest on the foundation?
Yeah, well, you know, we took a little bit of a break there. After our 10th year, we just kind of felt like it was a good time to step back, and life was getting awfully busy. And it's a good question. We're starting this year now. Our room in the room that we were funding in the hospital, Life room that we supported, that we donated $1 million to Sanford for. That opens this summer, so we'll have our grand opening in the room, and it'll be open to the public, I believe. I think they'll all get to see it, and so that'll be kind of fun. I think that, you know, that'll be a really cool thing for the foundation to sort of see the fruits of everybody's labor, and yeah, a lot of people put a lot into it, so it'll be cool to see that. And yeah, you know, whenever it is, you know, if it's this year that we're home, I know that Bridge and I'll definitely, you know, want to ramp things up a little bit more. So we're looking forward to kind of getting more involved again when things slow down on the hockey front.
That's awesome. Appreciate the time, Matt. Appreciate all your involvement in the community, and we'll catch you soon.
All right, guys. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Cullen, who you talk about value to the community. I mean, just another million here donation. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
He's a good guy. Good guy, good family.
This is the Kopech and Izzo and McFeely Sports Show on Saturday morning. Chris Murphy, what do we call him? Ink Stain Wrench?
A lot of things we call him. None that we can say on the radio.
Up next, right after this. We back on Kopech and Izzo Saturday morning. I miss this guy. Oh, it's not working.
Try it again.
Let's just park that, okay? Next question.
I miss the Krager.
Do you?
Kind of. I miss the little battles we had every once in a while.
Ooh. Well, tell us more.
Well, I don't know. Just every once in a while, you didn't like a question, so you'd go,
let's just park that, okay? Next question.
I will say this. There was more stuff going on early in his tenure than there has been during Kleiman's tenure. You know, with the
been pretty smooth.
If you're talking, you know, the Best Buy stuff, the drug stuff, the marijuana stuff, the DUIs, the
petition fraud.
The petition fraud. There's a lot of stuff going on during it hasn't been happening.
No.
Under Kleiman.
No. No.
Something will happen. I mean, it's
when you have 120
19-year-old guys together or whatever, 22-year-old guys together, something at some point is going to happen.
Well, I'm sure our next guest is probably working on the story just from our interview with Matt Cullen on what do you say about retirement?
He's leaning that way. Definitely leaning that way.
Chris Murphy of the Forum joins us. What'd you think of that? What'd you make of that, Chris?
First of all, you guys have me following Matt Cullen. That's kind of not fair. You got Josh Dumal after me. Jeez.
Well, but really with you, does it really matter who you follow?
Oh, yeah, I guess either way, it's going to be awful. Well, he's giving me the same answer for about 3 years now, it seems like, every summer. It's kind of the same thing. At this point, I just think he's going to play until he's 90 at this point. I don't know. I mean, the last 3 summers, it's been kind of the same tradition of asking him a million times, so what are you going to do? And it sounds harder and harder for him to walk away from the game. He sounded so for sure after they won the cup in the game, this last one. But then the next day I talked to him, and it almost was like he sat and thought about it. I mean, the thing that got me was when I asked him, you know, what would you do afterwards if you did retire? And it sounded like it was something he's never really fathomed. He's like, I've played this game since I was 2 years old. This is all I've ever wanted to do. So I don't think he realizes like how many opportunities he probably has outside of hockey. But then again, I mean, it's hard to give up on something you've done for 38 years. So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know with him. I really don't.
The guy is amazing. He's 40 years old to play at that level, and to play the penalty kill for as long as he did.
He's still got speed.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 40 years old, and he's not some
token guy out there for a minute shift.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. The last 2 years, it's just been – hockey's just such a funny sport in the sense that, you know, there's so many factors that go into it. Like, not to say that, you know, he's not a lot of credit. He doesn't deserve a lot of credit for it, but, I mean, you're put on the right line. You're put in the right system. I mean, things were looking terrible through the first bunch of games that first year with Pittsburgh. Then they got rid of the coach, got a new coach. He got on a new line. They got a new system. And all of a sudden, Cullen has two more cups. It's fascinating how that works in hockey, how, you know, there's just so many other factors to it. But, yeah, at the same token, I mean, that guy is a madman when it comes to keeping his body in shape and dieting and what he does. And what he does in the summer and the off season. I mean, it's insane. I mean, he you know, his body is his job, and that's what he does. So yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Got to be 90-10. He retires. I mean, 40 just seems sort of like a number, that age. Okay, now you're 40. You're not 38, 39. It's like another level of age. I think maybe I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I don't know how many guys play until they're 40. Gordie Howe or what?
Not a lot. I found the stat that, you know, since 1968, only seven guys have won a cup at 40 or older. Now that Cullen's the seventh, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, the other thing too that comes into play with hockey, which is fascinating, and this comes into play with any sport. I mean, but a lot with hockey, it's incredible at how healthy he stayed. I mean, there's just so many random things that can happen that it's incredible that, I mean, 2 years ago, he played every single game at the age of 39. This year, I think he only missed 10. I mean, it's incredible that he, and that's where I think you start to say to yourself, you know, how long can I keep risking this? That, you know, at some point I'm going to get hit really, really hard. I mean, this playoff was the most I've seen him get hit, especially against the Predators. I mean, last playoffs it seemed like he was just cruising, but he got hit hard a lot of times this playoffs. And, I don't know. I mean, this was the first time that he said, you know, he feels kind of tired. I mean, he feels kind of tired. I mean, God forbid Matt Cullen, you know, feel tired. This was the first time where I talked to him after the season, and he's like, you know, my body just doesn't feel like it was at 20. But then the next day, he talked to the Pittsburgh press, and he said he's never felt healthy in his career, healthier in his career. Well, so, like, I just don't know.
A couple things. Now, and I don't know, Murph, you know this, I'm sure, is what do the Penguins have coming back? I mean, obviously they're going to have Sidney Crosby, but do they lose anybody? Is there any, you know, impending free agent who's going to leave? Because if they're going to be loaded again next year, that might play into decision again, even though you're playing with fire, because what are the chances of winning three straight cups? But, okay, so that's part of it. The other part of it is what is Cullen's contract status? Would he have to come back for another one-year contract? And how much money could he make? Because he has lots of money. I know people who know Matt very well, and they say he's very good with money. So he's got lots of it. But if the Penguins come back at you and say, here's $1 million to play one more year, that's $1 million freaking dollars to play one more year of hockey. That's a lot of money.
Well, and it's $1 million to play one more year of hockey in a city that he's familiar with, a team that's won two cups. I mean, this isn't like he's being asked to go to a new city he's never been to.
Right.
I mean, he's got it set up to where his kids can go to school. He's set up. He knows what he's doing in Pittsburgh. It's not like he's being thrown into another place.
But
so that's another part to it.
But you're assuming, though, that the Penguins want him back as well. We have to keep that in mind, too, right?
Right. No, yeah, right. I mean, I think from, like, at this point, I mean, it's crazy to say, I think from a PR standpoint, I mean, if Cullen wants to come back, the Penguins, I mean, those fans love him at this point because of the whole dad thing. And, I mean, because he's been solid. I mean, you couldn't have asked for more from a fourth-line center. But the thing is, when I talked to Cullen, it seemed he kind of felt, you know, there could be guys going their separate ways in terms of Pittsburgh. So don't get me wrong. I mean, they're still going to be great. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. They're just going to. I mean, they're probably, I mean, they passed the Blackhawks in terms of talking dynasty in the most recent of years. I mean, they've just been dominant. So they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I don't know if they'll be as good as they were the last 2 years. And you're right. I mean, you play this much hockey, I mean, eventually it catches up to you. I mean, this is a ton of hockey to be playing. To win two Stanley Cups is insane. And, yeah, so I don't know that they'll be as good. But you're right. I mean, to take a step back and to be like, okay, you know, I'm Matt Cullen. You know, you paid me $1 million and I did better this year. Shouldn't I get a raise? If you start thinking that way, then, you know, from the other side, from Pittsburgh, I'd be like, well, Matt, you know, you're 40 years old. I mean, we just are waiting for you. And you did get injured this year, which you didn't 2 years ago. So, I mean, it starts to get into a weird, awkward kind of situation to where, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they would offer him more money. I mean, he's a free agent technically, but yeah, he just made a mill. So, I mean, you got to at least match the mill. So yeah, I don't know. It could be an awkward situation. And yeah, maybe that's where Matt just says, like, I just don't want to go through that whole free agency madness again, and kind of as to how good I am or whatever. So
all right.
Who knows?
About 30 seconds left with Chris Murphy. Quickly, Murph, Manoma and Wobbin, the merger. What do you think? Are they going to make it? Is it going to work?
Yeah. No, they'll be fine. I mean, the Manoman-Wobbin rivalry isn't what it was when, you know, the two football coaches, John Clark and Paul Clark, were playing. It's totally different. These kids all know each other. They're all friends. It seems like the players are excited to play with each other, to have, you know, competitive teams. I mean, football, if they're in 1A, which I would be interested, you're going to ask John how, like, when you have him on next, like, how sure he is that they're going to be in 1A. I'm not sure how he knows that, because I wouldn't be surprised if they moved to 2A when they combine. But that football team should be a monster if it's in 1A. So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens. But, yeah, they'll be fine. It'll be fine.
All right, Murph, got to take a break. Thanks.
All right, see ya.
This is Kopech and Izzo. We'll be back right after the bottom of the hour news. Mike McFeely sitting in for Dom. I don't know why you can't do your show on your wedding day. Come on.
I think it's very snowflakish. I think it's very weak of Dom to not. I mean, he's not getting married till 4.
Yeah.
So why can't you do radio from 9 to 11?
I don't know.
I mean, what else is he doing? I mean, sitting around talking to family? His family flies in from New York? I mean, whatever.
Speaking of family, John Clark Jr. is the head football coach, girls basketball coach, and athletic director at Manoman, and probably does 15 other things, too, at that. His brother, of course, is a football coach at Wobbin. Those two forces will eventually be joining together. John, kind enough to take a few moments off the golf course to join Kopech and McFeely. Good morning, John.
Well, the way the golf game's going, I'm glad to take a break here this morning, fellas.
Where are you playing? Where are we taking you away from?
We're at Monomin Country Club.
Ah, very nice. The old Jim Strandamo track. Is Jim still hanging around up there, him and Gary Johnson?
He still comes back for our invitational tournament. He's not around too much, but he comes back for our annual invitational tournament in August. So.
You think about the good golf, not to turn this into a golf conversation, but you think about the great golfers that have come out of Monomin. It's pretty impressive for such a small town.
Yeah, for a little nine-hole track, we've had quite a run. Our golf team just won the state championship in Class A here last week. So kind of neat. I think we finished second, and now first.
So what's been the feedback, John, since it's been announced that the two forces will co-op?
You know, it's been a mixed bag, obviously. A lot of opinions, mostly positive. You know, it's hard for some people to let go, which is very understandable. I mean, both communities are very rooted in their sports programs, and they are very prideful of their sports programs, and you know, it's bittersweet. I mean, it's in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to do this because we'd have all our kids that are coming out and participating in athletics, but that's just not the case anymore. So the numbers are kind of dictating we make this move.
Just to clarify, it'll be in basketball, boys and girls, for this upcoming school year, all other sports the year after that. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. We already are combined in all our spring sports and wrestling and dance lines, so this coming year, we're adding boys and girls basketball, and then the following year, we'll add football and volleyball, and then we'll have a full co-op.
Is the hesitation or the bittersweet angle, is that more from an adult parent's old-timer standpoint, or is that coming from the kids? Because I have a daughter in high school at Morehead High, and I don't know that kids view the world the way that us old people, if I know they don't view the world the way us old people do. So is it coming from the kids or the adults, some of the bittersweet?
Nah, the bittersweet is more from the adults, the traditionalists, you know, the back in the glory days, we did it this way. And, you know, the Monomin-Wabin rivalry was as heated as you'd get, probably one of the best rivalries in the state of Minnesota, you know. And that's waned as time has moved on. Like I've said, you know, our kids right now, we're combined in a bunch of sports the way it is, but they're very good friends, you know. With social media now, they're communicating. They know what's going on. They're probably communicating during the middle of class, to be honest with you. You know, it's the kids, that's the easy part. You know, like you said, it's some of the adults that just, it's tough for them. But like I said, you know, in the long run, it was going to happen, and I'm glad we're getting out in front of it and not waiting until we're in dire straits.
I think it's almost in some ways a community somewhat loses its identity when it doesn't have its own school. You know, I mean, and I know that it all works together because the schools and the churches are the centers of communities of our small towns. But I think people like to have that Monomin High School or Wabin High School, and they still will. But with sports combined, I think that they just kind of lose the town identity a little bit.
And that's, you know, that's probably the biggest concern, is losing your identity a little bit. And, you know, my closet has nothing but maroon and gold and Monomin Indians on it. So, you know, I'll have to get a new wardrobe myself. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of Wabin people are the same. They got the bomber blue on. And so, you know, you lose some of that, but at the same time, hopefully we're very successful and we can build our new identity and new tradition. And, you know, I'm excited that both communities support their teams very well. So I'm expecting jam-packed gyms and a ton of people at football games in a year. And just hopefully the community rallies and we can have something special.
Are you going to keep the town names, Monomin, Wabin?
As of right now, yes. It's looking like we're going to be the Monomin, Wabin something. And that's going to be to be determined.
You have to have you're going to rebrand colors, mascot. What's the process going to be for that?
We're going to wait until we actually get back into school session and give our student bodies most of the say in that. So our kids are very creative, so they'll come up with something very neat and cool and different, hopefully, and kind of our own thing. And we'll let the kids come up with the ideas, and as a committee, we'll narrow those down, and then we'll probably have both communities just vote and see which one we like best.
Manobin Athletic Director John Clark joins us on the WDY Sports Show Saturday morning. Before we let you go, you're talking about declining numbers. Can you give an example of that? Say in football, what do you mean by declining numbers?
Well, here's a classic example. Last fall at our first football game, in grades 10 through 12, we had 10 kids dressed. So we had to start freshmen that probably didn't have any business even being on a varsity team, but they were starting and playing. And we lose a lot of kids from our junior high years to that 9th and 10th grade year for a number of reasons in our area. You know, a lot of our kids now are going to work, so they can pay for their cell phones, so they can pay for gas money, things like that. When I started coaching early in my career, we had 50 to 60 kids out 9 through 12. Right now, we're lucky if we get 30. We're usually in the mid to high 20s for kids 9 through 12. So, and we've tried a lot of things. You know, I mean, our football program has been very successful over the years, and we're still struggling to get kids out.
So just to be clear, the numbers of kids in the school, is that shrinking, or is it just the number of kids going out for football that is shrinking?
No, it's both. Okay. Our enrollment is just kind of on a gradual decline. It's kind of leveled off now. I don't think it's going to get a whole lot lower, but it has declined quite a bit. And it, like I said, now it's kind of leveled off. And it just we're losing a couple kids here and a couple kids there each year. In all of our sports, not just football, but and Wobbin is almost a mere image of us, you know, and that's kind of what spawned this conversation is our numbers are really dwindling and we're struggling to keep kids out. And, you know, we've had to move kids up and play ninth graders at the varsity level. And, you know, that's not the best thing for those kids most of the time. So it's just we're in a struggle right now and we're trying something to kind of maybe get more participation back in.
Has a decision been made on who's going to be the head coach, co-coach, when you and Paul get together in a couple of years, or whoever is the best golfer, or how's that going to work?
Well, there'll be a discussion on that, and I'm not worried about that at all. Our coaching staffs know each other very well. I've talked with Paul a little bit, and we both agree that coaching is coaching. It doesn't matter who the head coach is. As long as we're both coaching, that's kind of in our blood. So, you know, we preach all the time to our kids, it's not about the glory of the person, but it's the glory of the team. So I think both of us understand that, and I think both of us can set that example and say, hey, you know, we're one of us. We don't really need to be head coach. We just want to coach you guys and try to make you the best player you can be.
Okay, thanks, John. Appreciate the time and all the insight into this co-op.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. John Clark, Jr., he's the head football coach, athletic director at Manobin High School. We're going to take a break and finish up the show, the big show, right after this. We're wrapping up the big show.
I haven't watched them much. I only saw the highlights of them. I don't know. I was not watching North Dakota State. I apologize. But damn it, let me take it back. I'm not apologizing. I got better things to do with my time than watch North Dakota State. No, I haven't watched them much. I only saw the highlights of them. I don't know. I was not watching North Dakota State. I apologize.
I remember when he said that. I remember watching that episode.
It was terrific. It was terrific.
Everybody appears like, what? We are the Bison. Who's going to
national brand? It's not a national brand. NDSU is not a national brand.
Not quite yet.
Not quite yet. Or ever. What were you asking me? I'm sorry.
I don't know. Who's going to win the Open?
I don't know who's going to win the Open.
It's
Saturday.
It's like nine guys.
Yeah, there's a million guys. One of the problems that they're having at the U.S. Open is that they had a bunch of big names miss the cut, and so it's going to be, you know, some guy you've never heard of possibly win the U.S. Open, which doesn't always make for the best drama, doesn't always make for the best storyline. But the interesting thing is this, one of the guys who's up there, this Brooks Koepka, have you seen
athlete.
This?
The athlete.
Oh, my word. Yeah. You look at like Dustin Johnson, I missed the cut, I think, as well. But Dustin Johnson is this big, huge athlete. I mean, 6, whatever the heck he is, 6'3", 6'4". Just a ripped athlete who could probably play D-end, you know, along with our friend from Shiloh Christian. And then you get this Brooks Koepka. He could be a linebacker. He could be a fullback. Just built like a brick outhouse. It's you look at some of the highlights from the old days and you watch Johnny Miller and these guys, and it's just a whole different
world. They look more like Ricky Fowler. I mean, yeah, Ricky's kind of a small guy.
He's just a little guy. Yeah, Ricky Fowler's just a little guy. But even he is, you know, he works out, but he's just not a big guy. But some of these guys coming up, Tony Finau, these guys are massive. Guys that would never think about playing golf 20, 30 years ago. And now they're, you just have these all-around athletes who are playing, who had probably had options to play football, basketball, whatever, baseball.
You have an amateur who's one shot back or two shots back, Cameron Champ. Whatever happened to the USGA making this all-worldly tough stuff?
Well, but see, that's part of the problem. In my view, that's part of the problem is that the U.S. Open, USGA has decided to go to some of these newer courses. This Erin Hills is only like a 10-year-old golf course, whereas it used to be you'd go to all the traditional, you know, Winged Foot, Shinnecock Hills, all the courses out east, and you'd have a couple in the West Coast, Pebble Beach. And now they're trying to, I guess they're trying to grow the game, expand the game, but you end up with these goofy leaderboards, and it's just, I mean, you got guys 7-under par after two rounds. I don't know if that's the best thing.
Yeah, the average golf fan does not know Tommy Fleetwood, Brian Harman, Jamie Lovemark.
No, Paul Casey, Brian Harman, Tommy Fleetwood, Brooks Koepka, Jamie Lovemark, even Brant Snedeker and Hideki Matsuyama are not household names. So there's really no big.
There's no Phil.
And Phil pulled out because of his daughter's graduation, so he didn't play. But it's, you know, it's just, I don't know.
It's still the Open, but.
Yeah. So whatever.
Do you prefer this Open over the Masters or the British Open?
No, to me, it's always been the Masters number one, of course, just because you know the holes and it's just all the tradition and all that stuff. Probably the British Open, to me, has been the second most favorite one to watch just because it's so different. It's on links courses. The weather's always crummy. And to watch these guys have to play in bad weather is always kind of fun to see who can handle that. The U.S. Open has kind of been, despite it being our national championship, it's always been my third favorite. And then the PGA is just, like, to me, it's always been kind of another tour event. But it's, I don't know. I've always kind of liked the idea that these guys have to struggle a little bit.
It's the test of golf.
As opposed to, I thought maybe it got too extreme sometimes where these guys are having to chop it out of the hay. And if you missed a fairway, you automatically make bogey. I'm not sure about that severity. That penality of the golf course.
Well, it separates the Open from, say, the Byron Nelson, where this is just a different test of golf.
Yeah.
But apparently Erin Hills is a course with wider fairways, which you think in the U.S. Open, that's maybe not always the case. And, well, it hasn't been the case.
Right, and you're right. That's what separated the U.S. Open from everything else was that it didn't have 60-yard wide fairways. It didn't have guys shooting 7-under par through two rounds. It was even par was always the number. The USGA always tried to have the winner finish at even par because that meant it was the true test of golf and it was a survival. I don't know that this is going to be that.
I bet they go back to the way it was.
But now the guy in charge of the USGA now, though, is Mike Davis, and he's a guy that started this whole trend of getting away from the traditional
blue bloods. We'll see how the ratings treat it then. It's a ratings game.
That, to me, is still one of the talkers about the US Open is Fox has had it now. This is, I think, the third year that Fox has had the U.S. Open. The broadcast is terrible. It was awful the first year. It got a little bit better last year, but I was watching some of it the other day when I was home for my three-hour lunch break, and it's just terrible. It's a bad production. It's a bad broadcast. The announcers aren't in sync. The broadcast isn't in sync. There's no explanation. They had some cheesy bits they were doing. It was just, I didn't like it. I don't like it. I don't like what Fox tries to do to golf because they're trying to make it again into the, you know, the edgy NFL type thing. And it's like, that's not what golf is. Golf is boring being watched by a bunch of 55-year-old white guys. That's what golf is.
And what's the deal with Joe Buck doing golf? How long has he done? This is his
third year.
I've never heard him do golf, and I can't pass the fact that he's doing football.
He's a baseball guy.
Yeah.
He's a baseball
I can't get over
guy.
That fact. Yeah. I don't know.
I agree. Yeah. And Buck's been doing it for the last 3 years since Fox has had the contract.
Right.
And it's just, you got Curtis Strange, and it's just not very good. Just not at all. And I don't know how that gets better because they've now had 3 years to do it, and they haven't, in my view, improved very much.
Is this this is last year, though, isn't it?
Oh, no, they signed a 10-year contract.
It's a 10-year?
Oh, they handed out, Fox handed out a pile of money. Oh. And that's why the USGA did it, was it was, they said, all right, here's a freaking $1 billion or whatever it is. Well, but it's, they took the money.
Getting a little concerned. Dom hasn't tweeted in like 20 minutes. Getting cold feet?
No.
He's busy putting that tux on, probably. You got to put the tux on early.
Dom,
so you gotta
Dom
go
does
take
not
pictures,
drink.
All that sort of stuff.
Oh, that's right. I bet they're taking pictures.
Yeah,
that's
they
got to
do all that sort of stuff.
So we think the whole sports staff and all the newsroom, if there's not an open bar, we're going to show up for 10 minutes and say, congrats. Okay, we're out of here.
I mean, we're newspaper guys, right? Newspaper, TV, radio guys. I mean, we live on alcohol, don't we? I mean,
Did Carson get invited?
I don't know about
that. Minicamp's over.
I think the head coach from the local football squad did. He might be there, from what I understand.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to get on my, get a little scoop.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll stay.
Take the days, the guy's
oh, I can't
days,
believe I wasn't
take
best
the guy's
man.
Day
I'm still
off.
A little hurt I wasn't best man.
Well, you're not a good man, so why would you be? How can you be the best man?
Just a little hurt. A little down. I woke up this morning kind of all down. I'm sure some guy from New York is the best man.
Yep, some slick talking New Yorker. Hey, man, how you doing? Hey, Dom. Hey, Dom, I'm going to give you away now, man. Forget about it. Right? You got some guy like that doing the best man thing?
I'll just saunter in.
Dom's dad is going to be the best part of the wedding. Right?
Well, Dom's dad is much better man than Dom.
Oh, well, no question. Quality individual.
I'm just kind of moping around today. Big E's overseas.
Yeah, and Big E's not even there.
He's overseas
big
on this
big
trip. Big
E takes a vacation to Dubai and Lebanon. He doesn't even go to Dom's wedding. Can't even fly back. It's ridiculous.
Thank you, Michael.
Hey, thank Join you. It. Hey, thank you, Jeff. Hey, Dom, let her have it. I do. Hey.
Thanks to our guests, Mike Cummings, Funan Barker, Matt Cullen, John Clark Jr., and of course, thanks to all of you for coming on for another 2-hour show. We'll be back again next week. Dom will not be along.
I do!
We're out of here.